Welcome to Habs Unfiltered. This independent podcast is featured on the Hockey Writers and iHeartRadio, bringing you honest and unfiltered entertainment and discussion on the Montreal Canadiens and hockey news. Your hosts, Matt Smith, Treg Wilson, and Blaine Putney, are proud to be one of your trusted sources. If you are talking about it, so are we. And welcome back to Habs Unfiltered, episode 394. I'm your host, Blaine Putney, and I'm joined now by my co-host, Treg Wilson.
Hello.
So, Super Bowl weekend. It's the Taylor Swift watch. And while we wait, the Canadians played two games and lost two games.
It's a typical Super Bowl weekend.
Yeah, it seems to be the tradition now. Anyway, so in this episode, we'll talk a little bit about the injuries that have happened. They're starting to pile up again. What openings this provides, if any. The good and the bad from this weekend as well. So why don't we just kick it off with injuries. RHP was put on long-term injury, and Ottawa was called up. Then at the start of this game against the St. Louis Blues, Harris took a headshot. We'll talk about that hit in a little bit. And at the end of that game, Gooley went into the boards awkwardly. Not sure if that's ribs or his shoulder, but either way, it did not look good. So in the span of 3 days, the Canadians seem to have lost three solid young players. I had hoped that the injury bug had been swatted, but it seems it's come back full force.
Well, Harris's concussion, he'll probably be out at least 3 weeks. From what I've seen, he's pretty wobbly, trying to get up from the hit. The hit will probably be looked at. I don't know if he'll get anything, but it'll be looked at. Harvey Pinard, I don't see as a loss, really. Bottom four, bottom six guy, but it's gonna open up something for Joshua Waugh anyway. So maybe he'll stick up there for the season now that RHP is out. With Gooley's injury, we're not sure how severe that is, but given the Canadiens' odds, he's probably gonna miss some time. But that could also open the door. Well, Barron will definitely get a call back up into the NHL. Hopefully, he can have the recall like he had last year when he went down and came back up. And maybe this opens the door for a Logan Mailloux or a Mattias Norlander to get some time up in the... They're both left-handed defensemen, so... but they are short right-handed defensemen, so we'll see what happens.
Now, for the hit itself, the Harris hit, it happened just a couple hours ago. It was in the first period of the game as we recorded Sunday. The game against St. Louis has just ended, and it happened in the first period. Now, he was kind of going down at the time that he got hit, and the hit was not necessary, but it looked like he hit his head with the hit, and then Harris hit his head on the ice when he went down. My take on the hit, it was not malicious, but it was unnecessary.
He didn't need to hit him, but I don't think he intended to hurt him when he hit him. I think he was just
finishing his check,
yeah. And it just so happened that Harris was on his way down to the ice for some reason when he did it. I think they'll look at it just because it was a 5-minute major. But who with the player safety, who knows what they're going to... It could be a 40-game suspension. It could be a $3 fine. I don't know.
So, my guess is it's nothing.
My guess is that maybe the maximum fine allowed. Maybe. But I
$7.
If it's any more than that, I would be surprised. And I don't think it should be any more than that. So.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate hit, especially with Harris just starting to come back now and starting to play his game again and getting some opportunities. But now we're looking at this and we're saying, well, maybe this opens some doors because he was in a rotation with the Arbor Jacki, who honestly, the way this game went today, would probably have been the better pick for the game, considering how rough it started to get soon after that Harris hit.
Well, I know Kovacevic got into a fight at the end of the game. Jaden Strumel got a game misconduct. So, yeah, he would have been. But I think what the Marty St. Louis was trying to match Arbor Jacki up with the known teams with known, like the Ottawas, the Washingtons with Tom Wilson and all that kind of stuff. Whereas
Guys
with.
like Morgan Riley.
I mean, Morgan. That whole thing is just a whole can of one guy shouldn't have done one thing and the other guy should have done something different than what he did. So, I mean, good on Riley or not, or good on Grigg to rile up the Leaf fans. Steve Dangle said it perfect. He said he's glad Grigg did that because everyone forgets that they're actually in a rivalry with Ottawa. And when they, and when the Canadian Tire Centre is 75% Leaf fans, he opened that rivalry up again. But I kind of agree. I don't usually agree with Steve Dangle, but I kind of agree with that. But anyway, it took away what it did is took away from all the diving that Tim Stützle does all over the ice and how Keefe called him out on live TV about how he's the biggest fucking diver in the NHL. No one's even talking about that, so I'll bring that up just so everyone still knows that Tim Stützle is the biggest diver in the NHL.
Don't think anyone's really arguing that point. It's kind of a given.
There's 100 Ottawa fans of the 205 there are that say he's not a diver.
Well, there's that. But back to Jacki and Harris and the rotation. This now you're losing two defensemen. Gooley, like you said, we're not too sure yet what's going to happen, where he is, how he's going to go. But this does open things up.
Well, with Jacki is going to get regular ice time now. He won't get scratched anymore. So you got Kovacevic that he was already playing pretty much all the time. So, I mean, you still got six defensemen. You're just down to six defensemen now. So, because, I mean, you still got Matheson, Savard, Struble, Jacki, Kovacevic, and, oh, maybe you don't have six defensemen.
You're down to
No, you
five
must.
right now.
Yeah, five. Sorry. You don't have. So you have to call someone up. So I would assume it's going to be Justin Barron.
I mean, by all rights, watching the Rocket the last little bit with both Barron and Mayu there, you'd think that Mayu would get the call, but I think they need him to play more time and more games before they make that call, based on his lack of games before he turned pro.
I think. Barron has the history. He has the NHL experience. I think he, and plus, I mean, if Barron's not in your future, here's an opportunity, which what I think they might have been doing with Harris is to showcase him and say, hey, this guy still has all this potential in case there's a move. I know Harris was put on the TSN trade bait there recently, and I think that's just due to him. He missed almost 3 weeks of hockey sitting in the press box. So, maybe they do the same with Barron because it's obvious Harris may not be available come trade deadline day, depending on what his concussion's like. And they may not move any of them. I'm just throwing out speculation here. Like they're still young defensemen, they may not want to part away from them just yet. So I don't think it's going to be Mayu. I think it's going to be Barron just based on experience and the fact that you're absolutely right. They want Mayu to keep getting the minutes down in Laval. He's very successful this year. I think he's the top scoring defenseman in the league or close to it anyway. And then you just got to keep him down there, keep his momentum going, and maybe near the end of the season, With maybe 5, 10 games left, you bring him up and give him a little show just to see what he has at the NHL level.
Because right now Laval is back in the playoffs. They like as we record today, they beat the Toronto Marlies. I think it was 6 or 7-1. So they're in a playoff spot right now. They're doing well. Laval might stay up with the big club for a while now, and that could slow them down a little bit. But overall, the young guys are showing well, and the opportunities are there because of the injuries. You were talking about trade bait and the deadline coming up, and I know Harris was on several different trade boards, and that's because the Canadiens have so many good young defensemen. I don't think anyone's going to get traded until the summer, if anyone is, but you hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, I mean that's just it. Like I say, they could be trade bait, they could be whatever, but I mean I don't see it. Young guys like that, I could see them putting in a bigger deal for a bigger package, like at the draft. Say we'll give you this Winnipeg pick and Jordan Harris slash Justin Barron for your top 10 pick or your this young player. You know what I mean? Zegras maybe or whoever. And again, I'm just throwing stuff out there. Like, I'm not trying to say they're going to trade this and this and get Zegras. I don't know what the price for Zegras would be. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see that. But it does make you wonder because they're putting them on the trade bait board that obviously, there's
There's
interest.
talk.
And there's talk. So look at Mayhew's third in scoring for defensemen, 2 points behind the leader. Sorry, I had to look that up. I had to know for sure.
I mean, he is having an excellent season down in Laval, and that's good. He was an all-star. He's doing really well offensively. Physically, he's setting the tone. Defensively, he still has some things to work on, and that's fine. That is absolutely fine.
And for an offensive defenseman, most of them do have some defensive work to work on because they mostly play an offensive role. It's, no different than when Logan Hutson is ready to come into the AHL slash NHL wherever he starts. He'll have some defensive stuff to work on, although he looked really good in the World Juniors on his defensive side.
He did.
And Reinbacher will be the opposite. Reinbacher will probably have to work more on his offensive abilities. When he comes over to North America as opposed to his defensive. It's just the way a defenseman plays. If like you have rare guys like Gouley who are pretty good on both sides, no matter where they're at. I mean, good relative to the league, I should say. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't think Gouley right now is a top defenseman in the NHL, but he's gonna trend to be a
No.
top two-way defenseman. Same with Jaden Struble is gonna probably be a awesome stay-at-home defenseman, like a really good stay-at-home defenseman. And Jacki, I think they're working on his two-way game to make sure he's a better. So I mean, everyone gets stuff to work on. They're only young. They're
Oh, yeah.
all under 22. But with Mayhew and Barron going back to that, yeah, Barron definitely is probably going to come up. Mayhew will stay, like I say, in the AHL and maybe get a cup of coffee in the AHL just to see how he handles the spotlight, especially when the trade deadline's over and they're at the point where they're like, okay, let's just have fun and see what we can salvage out of the season.
Because they're right now, with the loss of Monahan, clearly the depth at center is gone. You got Monahan's gone, and Doc is out for the season. Dvorak is out for the season. So that leaves Suzuki and Evans as your top centerman. I know Newhook came back, and I want to talk about him as well in a second. And they have him at center, but he's not really a centerman. He's more of a winger, ideally. Now, he's played excellent hockey in the two games since he's been back. Like, he's been very, very good. But as a center, there's better options in the long run. But for now, that's their only option. So considering that he's being forced in the role, I think he's doing well.
Newhook, well, was drafted as a center. When he got drafted by Colorado, he played center and junior, but he wasn't really, he's not a play driver. And I think you need a play driver to be a center. He's more of a, you guys do all the work and I'll finish it off type guy. So I think in that retrospect, plus he's not very good at faceoffs, but that's not all to a center's game. Yeah, and then you even so, they want Newhook to be a top six guy, then they can't bury him on the like bank. They can now because they don't have an option, but they can't bury him on the bottom line. And then you have who is the other defense under center? Kandanda got sent down.
It's no, that's it's the guy they called up from that they signed to the contract. I'm the
Oh,
name
Gignac. Gignac.
Gignac, yeah.
Gignac, yeah.
Now the reason I'm distracted is as we're talking, it just pops up. Now the Canadians have announced that Raphael Harvey-Pinard is going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, so that's long term. Kind of points back to, will Edouard stay up the entire time, or is this another one of those cases of a rotation between him, Emil Heinemann, and whatever other forward they call up?
I think it all depends on how Waugh, like I had no issue with Waugh when he was up the first time in Montreal. I thought he fit in well. I thought he drove, he was good on the lines. He drove the lines. He didn't seem out of place. He got a couple points. So I have no issue just based on that with Waugh staying up with Montreal. What I do have an issue with is Lavelle. Lavelle has a chance to make the playoffs, and with all these injuries, you're going to see Justin Barron and Joshua Waugh, maybe Logan Mailloux, and all these players go to Montreal because, of course, the parent club is the more important one. It's the one you got to fill out. It's the one that's making you money. But this could really hurt Lavelle's chance. But what could help Lavelle is if they put Allan on waivers and send him down to Lavelle. To clear up this two goalie thing because I'm pretty sure Allan's not tradable now, if I'm being honest. I don't think his
Well,
value is sinking.
they're not really helping him. Now, I'll get to Allan here in a second. I just
Yeah.
want to point out that Edouard in the game today played excellent hockey, great along the boards, played really well in traffic, created a lot of offensive opportunities, solid defensively. The kid is going to be a middle six NHL player, possibly top six. We'll see, but he does need more time in Laval, especially with a playoff spot. Now, with Allan, having the three goalie systems really hurt him. He's not getting a lot of starts. I think the last start was about a month ago or 2 weeks ago or some nonsense like that. So he's not really getting the reps in. And then you throw him in onto an afternoon game on top of that, and his he just you're not setting him up for success, especially if you want to
No.
trade him.
Yeah, especially if you get sense of trading him. Now, NHL GMs are not stupid. They're not going to look at him and go, "Oh, this guy's trash." They're going to look at it and say, "Okay, he's not playing very well under your three goalie system." I don't know how many games I'm going to get him into. Is this going to be an issue if I decide to put him into a game and he's going to sit, two and a half weeks between games because we're rolling with our starter because we're
Exactly.
fighting for a playoff stud. It's just this is what GMs are going to. They're not going to sit there and go, "Allan forgot how to play goaltender," because no, he didn't forget how to play goaltender. They understand Montreal is a was on a back-to-back. They understand Montreal defense isn't top of the league, and they also, if their scouts were watching this game, they're going to say, "Well, they lost one of their defensemen in the first period." You know what I mean? And they were basically playing with five defensemen. So I know I see on Facebook everyone's saying Allen's terrible, blah, blah, blah. I think his value is dropping, but I think it's not dropping because he's untradeable, which I kind of just said. But I think it's dropping because other teams are like, "Okay, we got to fix our goalie situation, but I need a backup that if I put in 2.5 every 2 weeks, he's gonna stop the puck for me." So far, you guys are only playing him every 2 weeks, and he's not stopping a beach ball. So,
Exactly.
like, is this gonna work for me? Now, if he finds a team where they're like, "Okay, we're going with goalie A and goalie B until we make the playoffs, maybe it's a better situation for Allen because he's going to get those, he's going to play once every three games instead of once every, because right now I think it's Montembeau, Allen, Primo. So he's missing three games, four or five, he's missing five games, six games in a row over a week and a half, 2 week span because of the three goalie thing. And if he gets on a team where maybe he's going to play every second game or every third game, then maybe he gets into a consistent level and his play will go up. Because we all know Allen's not a terrible goalie. I mean, at the start of the season, people were complaining that he was stealing too many points in too many games. And now, because he's had a few bad games in a row, everyone's like, oh, this guy's trash. So
Yeah.
it doesn't really work
Now,
that way. But.
for him, I think the best bet would be a team that plays a tandem, like you were talking about. I think Carolina is probably the only one at this point. So, what this has done is it lowers his value, but more importantly, is that it lessens the number of teams that would be in on him.
Right, because I mean, you had well, at one point you had Edmonton and Colorado and New Jersey and Carolina and Toronto. Well, now I don't think Toronto's going to go after Jake Allen. That's more of a lateral move for them. That's going. Switching one below average goalie for another below average goalie. Colorado
Then
was just looking for a
again,
competent backup for Gregorov.
yeah.
New Jersey's probably looking for a starter that can consistently stay whatever. I'm not quite sure. Like their goaltending's kind of weird. And does Allen fit into that anymore? Like maybe 3 years ago or what? They should have traded him
Hell,
before
maybe just
Christmas.
3 months ago.
They should have traded him before Christmas. And I think if they that when the market was out there for before Christmas, they could have moved him. Maybe it wouldn't have been as much as what you might have gotten at the near the trade deadline, but from the way he's playing now, it could have been might have actually just been the same. So yeah, I think Hughes kind of made a mistake waiting on trading a waiting this long to trade a goalie.
Yeah, I think he's holding to his, he's sticking to his guns on value and all that, and that's good. But at a certain point, you need to start clearing some of the added contracts. Now, when we get into the next half, there's a rumor about one contract, but I want to stay with Alan here and say that I agree. He should have probably moved him sooner. And even if he doesn't move him now, I don't think it's detrimental. As there's still teams can make moves in the summer, as long as they don't start the season next year with three fucking goalies.
I mean, it's not detrimental to the team, but it's going to be detrimental to Primo and Allen. I mean, Montembeau's still getting, he's like I say, Montembeau will start, then it's either Primo or Allen, and then Montembeau for a couple games, then Primo or Allen. And really, if you were that keen on not losing Primo, right? If that was your only worry, then you should have fixed this three goalie issue a lot sooner, because whether you trade Primo or you trade Allen, it doesn't really matter. You knew you were staying with Montembeau. So you should have, to me, like, I just think this is the first glaring mistake I've seen by this management team since they took over, in my opinion. That and
Is it really that
maybe
glaring though? I mean,
no,
it's
but
bad, but it's
I'm
not
just
that
saying,
bad.
like, I mean, maybe the Josh Anderson for a first thing, that's gonna probably end up being a mistake as well. But
That to me, that is the biggest mistake, not
that
trading
is a
him last year.
huge not trade him last year when the first was on the board to because now
Yeah.
you're just gonna and I mean if you 5.5 million isn't that bad of a contract right now, like in these like especially with the thing going up, so it's not that bad anymore. But it's $5.5 million on a guy who's doing
Probably
nothing.
going to be on your third line next year, and you've got guys that can play the role that he's got right now in the system that are coming up, like Slafkovský. Luke Tuck is looking like he's going to be getting a contract. There were he's kind of rare, but you've got people coming that could take the spot, and you're rebuilding, so you take the top value when you can take the top value, and it opens up more money. I don't know.
I
To me,
think they
that's the
just
bigger
hope.
con that would be the bigger mistake.
Yeah, I think they just hoped healthy he was going to be better. And A, he doesn't stay healthy. And B, this year he's been healthy. He just can't hit the, he can't just can't. I don't know what it is. I don't, I
Kind of
really,
look at him.
I don't know what it is.
Look at, by this time next year, we're probably going to be sitting there going, wow, it's amazing. He scored 30 goals.
Well, I don't know. I find this year pucks go, when pucks go to Anderson to die. As soon as the play, the
Yeah.
puck gets on Anderson's stick, the play is over. So,
Oof.
yeah. Anyway. Whatever, we're
So,
stuck with
all
him.
right. For now, definitely. Back to rumors and contracts. So we've got a little bit of time before this segment ends. I want to get to one rumor about a contract, and it's really weird to say this, but according to the fourth period, Joel Armia is getting interest from around the league.
I think I said that on our last show that I wouldn't be surprised if people get interested in Joel Armia. I think Joel Armia is having a pretty good season. He scored his ninth goal today. He's playing well defensively. The PK, which was terrible tonight, but the PK over the last month has been really good. He's part of that. He's one of those bottom six guys who can give you a lot of skill. He can stick handle inside a shoebox. And like one day he looks like Wayne Gretzky, the next day he looks like his brother Keith. But I'm just saying, on a contending team, him playing on your fourth line would be an asset to any contending team. Now, I don't think you're going to get a first round pick for him or anything, but I mean, you could probably get a solid third, or maybe if you retain, maybe a second. Maybe, I don't know,
If you retain,
that
maybe
seems
take a
kind of high.
contract.
That seems kind of high, but at least a third. You could probably get at least a third. I wouldn't
If
retain
you
on a third,
retain
but
50%, take a contract back, you'd probably get a second.
yeah, but you're doing more for the other team than the other team's doing for you. But yeah, I can see
Exactly.
that. But I mean,
And
I would rather risk a guy like Anderson on that and say, hey, we'll retain half of his cut, but then again, you've got retention now for 2 or 3 years, 3 or 4 years
yeah.
instead of just one. So, but
And
Allen.
I felt the retention was being kept for Allen for a trade for him.
Yeah.
But at this point, if you can move Armia and you retain, I think that's also a
Same.
good move to make.
It's really the same thing because one's 3.8, one's 3.5. So it's not like you're, it's just a $300,000 difference. But it's just $300,000 difference. It's not much pocket change.
In the grand scheme of things, on their level, not a big deal.
On their level, yeah, it's not a big deal. And
For us, that's a house.
exactly. Not even a house. but you could do that for Anderson too. Like, again, you're not going to get the first pick for Anderson, but if you retain, you might get a sweet second round pick and something else, maybe like a B level prospect. But I don't see, but again, you'd have to retain for 3 more seasons, and I don't see them doing it. Yeah, but I'm with you. I thought I would assume the retention was for Allen, but with the way he's been playing and the fact that the goaltending market's kind of getting fixing itself, no one's going to want to get a back Jake Allen as their backup and still pay whatever half of 3.8 is, so 1.6 or whatever it is. So, no, 1.4. I don't know. Anyway,
Either way, it's got
my math is
shades of
terrible.
last trade deadline. Like, it's got shades of last trade deadline where everybody got hurt and you couldn't trade anybody. Now it's, Jake Allen's not getting enough ice time, or not, he's not playing that great, so he's not going to be able to trade him.
I don't think he's not going to be. I don't think any player in the NHL, no matter what their contract is untradeable. You
I'm
just
not
have
saying
to
he's
have a.
untradeable.
He's just untradeable for what we would want to get for him.
So I don't think he's going to trade him for a seventh round pick because he knows that overall the value is higher, but
And
he's definitely not going to get what he was aiming for.
he could probably move into the offseason for something more. When teams are
Yeah,
more
exactly.
unsure about their goaltending situation going into the next year. Now, I mean, another guy they could retain on is David Savard. So I know he has talked about not really wanting, not looking at moving Savard, but I think a guy like Savard, if someone says, well, I'm going to give you a first round pick and a prospect if you retain 50%, I can't see Kent saying no.
No. All right. So we'll end the segment here. We'll take a quick break for some commercials. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the games and special teams. So stick around and we'll be right back. And welcome back. Those were amazing commercials, but we'll move on. So Canadians played the two games this weekend, lost both. We'll start with the game in against Dallas. The Canadians could have won that game. They only lost 3-2, but when you get dominated in a for an entire period, you really aren't setting yourself up well. So that inconsistent play, we're seeing that again. We're still. I'm not sure how St. Louis is going to fix that.
Well, when you have a young team, that inconsistent play should be expected a little bit. However, as the season progresses, you would think it would not be as much. Like you'd think it would, but I find every game they never. I can probably count on one hand how many 60-minute games they've played. And I mean, really, Dallas, the two goals within a minute is what trounced them. It's good to see Slafkovský. I know he was on the bench there telling the boys, we got this, we got this. It's good to see him being vocal on the bench. And the shot, man, the shot, Mr. The Dion Phaneuf is really helping him with the shot. And I really like to see that. So, well, Mr. Goal is Dion Phaneuf is just like playing defense for the practices there.
Yeah, if you saw the video, you'd know where. So Dion was at the blue line, making sure that he had the stick out in the right way for him. He looked a little bit more mobile than he used to during his game playing days.
Wow, I mean, yeah, he was shorter though. He looked shorter. I don't know, it was weird. It looks like he lost some height since his retirement, but he's working with Mr. Goal and it's working because his last three goals have just been top shelf snipes. And it was kind of funny because at the first of the season, all his goals were like garbage goals that kind of bounced off his ass, or he poked in because it was just loose in the, like a Brendan Gallagher goal because it was loose in the crease and he just happened to be there. But his last few goals have just been snipes. Alex Jodan, sorry, but I guess you're going to have to stop eating at the Poulet place there because Caulfield didn't get a point tonight, so his 11-game streak is over. But Slafkovský's on like a 4-game heater, so let's see if he heats up and goes. And Suzuki's, I mean, I know there's a lot. I know we were supposed to get into something, but I know a lot of people saying Suzuki's a second line center, a second line. I don't see it. I see Suzuki as a point per game center, and maybe as soon as this year or next year. And to me, that's good enough for me. I'm happy with that. I'm happy with the guy. He's on pace to have more points than any Canadian since Vincent Danfous in 1996, I believe. So, which is kind of sad.
Well, since Kovalev in like 09 or whatever, Kovalev had like
Was
80
Kovalev in
something.
09? Okay, so
I
I've
think
read somewhere it
Kovalev had
was
80.
Danfous in 96. So maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. I've been wrong before.
Now, with Suzuki, I mean, so Hughes has gone on and on saying that he would rather have a Bergeron type player, someone who can make the others around him better as opposed to some superstar who can hog the puck or whatever it is that they were going on about. And Suzuki is that type of player. I'm not saying he's the next Bergeron. I'm not saying he's the next, dominant Selke trophy winning center. What I'm saying is he's that two-way guy who does all those little things that help his line mates look better. He's able to get pucks to them through traffic. He's able to win battles. He's able to cover for them defensively. He does all those little things And he's still putting up points. I mean, he's on pace for what, 76 points?
76
77
points. And
points?
you're right. It was 12-11-08 with 84. So.
So you look at his play, and now Caulfield is a more complete player as well. Granted, he's not scoring at the pace that they had hoped for, but when you're on an 11 game point streak, it's not bad. And with Slafkovský now playing on that line, we've seen it over the last couple of months. He's gone from a tentative player who can barely stand up last season to a big physical power forward who's finishing his checks, who's winning his board battles, who's getting to the net, who's causing trap, causing havoc all over the ice. And more importantly, we talked about this earlier in the season where he wasn't getting a shot off quick enough. Like he would juggle with it a little bit, not release quick enough. Now that shot's coming off a lot quicker, and you mentioned he was working with Dr. Shot. It's showing. Like that shot, even if it's not going, if he's not scoring on it, he's getting those shots off a lot more often now. He's got a lot more chances in the slot. He's getting more shots from the slot, and it's starting to pay off.
Yeah, and he like I was just doing the numbers there. He's on pace for a 36-point season and 17 goals now. If you take away since Christmas, he's on like a 56-point pace or something silly like that. So I mean, Suzuki's now on a pace for 76, maybe 77 points because he got a point tonight. And Caulfield's on pace for 60 some odd points this season. So that entire line, and this will get into our one, we're going to talk about the team being a one line team. That entire line is probably one of the better lines in the NHL right now, right in this time period. I'm not going to sit there and say, but right in this time period, they're probably one of, I mean, like you say, Caulfield on 11 point streak. Koski's on like a 4 point streak. Suzuki's on five or, like they're scoring and they're scoring in every game. So that's what you want from your top line. They're also not getting pinned in their own zone as much when they're playing against the other top line either. I mean, that has a lot to do with Caden Gooley and how he has been able to ghost and shut down some top players like Sidney Crosby, Nick Robertson, Alex Ovechkin, and all these guys with his defensive play. Now, that's why losing him could be a big loss in that factor. But so we're looking now, you can honestly, you can say as a Habs fan, we have a line, we have a first line, we have a line that we're going to go, like what you had with Pastrnak, Marchand, and Bergeron. I'm not saying they're going to be as good and score as much as those guys. I'm just saying you looked at Boston as a one line team for years, but they just filled in the rest of their team with guys that were good enough, that were, you know what I mean? That, they had a great penalty kill, they had a good power play, and that line did all the scoring, and they had moderate secondary scoring, and they made the play. Now, they never won a cup, but they made the playoffs every year. They won a President's Trophy. They became a good team. And I think that's what Kent Hughes is trying to convey here and say, okay, no, we don't have that generational superstar talent. Do we want it? Of course we want it. Who wouldn't want it, right? However, we're going to turn this team into a good team by using guys like Nick Suzuki and Cole Caulfield and Slafkovský and Kirby Doc when he gets it back, when he gets back. I think fans look at this team and think, oh, we don't have that high scoring, high Guy Lafleur, Kucherov, McDavid type player. And I think once everyone's back and healthy and we get this draft pick this year, and he is this good scoring young offensive player, I don't think we're that far off. I don't think we're that far off
No.
from having two solid lines. And then now you just got to take your third and fourth line and go, okay, what's going to make these two lines? Fourth line doesn't matter. But what are we going to make this third line? If you got three solid lines, your fourth line is just killing 8 minutes of hockey a night to give everyone a rest. You just want to make sure that line isn't going to be scored on eight times in those 8 minutes.
True.
So, but.
Now, they are a one line team right now. And
Right
like
now they are,
Boston,
yeah.
yeah. So Boston, like you mentioned, they had that good secondary scoring. Well, with the Canadians, you're looking at ha if Doc were healthy, Newhook healthy all year long, you have Doc and Newhook. Now you look at Joshua Roy, there's a guy who can be on your top six. So now you'd have two lines that could reasonably create offense and hold up again defensively against a top six anywhere else. Then you're looking at they've got that depth they have to keep building on, but it's coming. The power play this year, getting over to special teams, because I think that's a big difference here. Last year they sucked horribly. This year they started off looking like shit, but have really come on as of late, at least since the December road trip. You're looking at about 22, 23% over that time frame, which is good. I mean, it'd be middle of the pack. They'd be around 16th, 15th in the NHL. So that's middle of the pack with that. That'd be acceptable for a team to be a playoff team. Now it's the penalty kill. The penalty kill sucks ass. It has
For a
most of the
month,
season.
I will say for January, it wasn't too bad.
No.
The last 4 or 5 games, it was pretty good. But you're right. It's one of those, their penalty kill is one game. You look at it, you go, man, this penalty kill has been really good. And then the next game, you're like, oh my God, this is just, what's going on here? It's freaking terrible. I find their penalty kill, it's almost like they just, oh, okay, they have a power play. We'll just go set up in our box. Let them come down and set up, and hopefully they won't score. Like there's no attack, there's no pressure. They don't pressure anyone. They just sit back and hope David Savard stops all these pucks coming in, and it's I don't know. Like I don't know who runs their PK. I think it's I don't know who runs their
Robida,
PK. Robida, yeah,
I
and
suppose.
I'm assuming, and the I just finally just come back. They get in their box and then they just do this, you
Yeah,
know, and
and that was the difference in the game today against St. Louis. St. Louis took advantage of pretty much every power play. Now, they didn't
yeah.
score on all of them, almost, but they did generate a ton of momentum every time. And with the league's third worst penalty kill, that's not a surprise.
And not at
And
all.
you're
Like, I
right, they're
mean,
not very, you're right, they're very, very passive. St. Louis had several times where they kind of juggled the puck a little bit on the outside. And when a player is having a hard time controlling the puck, that's when you want to see the
attack them.
aggressive play,
Yeah.
attack. But they didn't. And it cost them.
They were 3 for 5 in the power play today. So that just goes to show you how terrible that was.
It's a field goal right there.
Yeah, and that that's a big issue. But I mean, David Savard, your best penalty killer. Armia's a good penalty. Like they have some guys who are good penalty killers, but when you only have one or two guys that are good out there, and the other two are just standing there, there's not much you can do really. And of course, you had a night like tonight where Jake Allen was. I don't know what Jake Allen was doing. So.
He had a bad game. He did.
Put all those
So.
factors into it, and you can understand why they were 3 for 5 in the play. But you're right. The power play to me has been up and down. Near the start of the season was bad. Then they went on that streak where they were like scored like a power at least one power play goal in like 8 straight games, and then it went to shit again. And then now it's kind of turning. But like we said before, why is the power play looking so good? Because Slafkovský, like even on that 5 minute, their goal was scored just after the power play
And it was still 5-on-4.
ended. And it was still 5 on 4 because the guy technically didn't get back into the zone when they scored. And what a beautiful pass by Slafkovský, by the way. But it's because the top line clicks, it's working. Monahan was in there and he was helping out. He's gone now, and I believe Newhook is now in
New hooks
there.
in that spot, in the bumper spot, and he's doing really well. He's doing really well there.
Mathieson's starting to actually pass with Slafkovský, and I don't know if someone said something to him or, but I do notice in the last few games a lot more passes going over to his right side than just to his left side or shin pads or whatever he decides to do. So that's good and it's working. That first power play unit looks good. The second power play unit, I don't even know if it's members of the Montreal Canadiens. I don't know who's on the ice for the second power play unit. I think it's just a bunch of guys in hats.
It's yeah, Gooley was on the second wave and he was doing well there. But
What is it? Anderson, Gooley, Evans, Pearson, and I don't know, Gignac.
no, well, they kind of rotate depending on who was on the ice last and
But
who
I mean, who do they
arrives and
have?
blah
They
blah
don't.
blah.
I mean, let's okay. Yes, we're making fun of it, but who do they really have to put on there? They don't have anyone to put on the second power play unit. Like
I mean, WoW
Anderson,
would be a good choice. Your call up, you got him there for an offensive, for offensive play.
you do,
Yeah,
but
bring him up.
let's tone it down a little. I think he did the first time he was up. I did think he did get some power play time for if I recall. I don't think it was much, but it's the same thing they did with Slafkovský. He kind of worked his way to it, and then they wanted to make sure Slafkovský was ready to, do that. And I think they're going to do the same thing with Watt. And I don't have an issue with that. I see what you're saying, though. I get it. If that's what he's there for, put him in the situations. Let him seek. Don't let him
Watch him to
sink or
lose.
swim. But at least you can see if he's ready, or at least you can see if he's going to make the adjustments needed. I don't know. Like it'd be interesting. Like say they call up Logan Mailloux, are they going to pop him on the second power play unit, or are they going to maybe pop him
Absolutely
on the
should.
first power lead? They should. That's what he's there for. He's an offensive defenseman. So it's. I mean, like I say, this would be a whole different story if Doc was healthy, Newhook stayed healthy. I mean, then you would have two power plays where you're like, okay, if this first doesn't score, well, they do have a chance on the second, right? So right now,
Which
it's if the
makes,
first doesn't score, you might as well forget about it.
yeah, and which makes the fact that the power play right now is middle of the pack in the NHL that much more impressive.
Yes, because it's really just the top power play unit that's doing all the, really,
Yeah.
it's, let's be honest, it's four guys. Well, Mass, I can't exclude Matheson, but yeah, it was a five man unit that just worked well, especially with Monahan there, and he's going to be missed. But like you say, Newhook's playing well in that bumper role. They're doing all right. It's going to take a little bit of adjusting. I personally think Slafkovský would have been a good guy in that bumper role, but
They seem to like him
Newhook
on
took
the
that
half
too,
wall. So
and it's
having
working.
him and yeah,
And it's working.
because
So
he's got
let's
a
leave it
great
there.
shot. So why not?
I mean, it's okay. Against Dion Phaneuf, it looks really good, but
Fair. Well, I mean, to be fair, he is in Montreal and he does have to go around a lot of pylons.
that's true. That's true. So he has lots of practice for it.
He does. He does. There's all those construction pylons on the way to the rink. All right, so yeah, the rest of this season's going to be difficult to watch. There's going to be a couple more guys likely traded, but it should open up some opportunities for the younger guys, especially as we mentioned in the first half, this rash of fucking injuries hitting again.
Like I say, let's hope Gooley's maybe just had the wind knocked out of him or whatever. Harris, I wouldn't say that's a big loss. Like you're looking at it now, go, is this a big loss? Well, no, not really, but it is considering the depth. So, you're losing Harris. Okay, well now we got to bring up Barron or Mailloux. Now you're, whereas hopefully in another year or two, you lose a player, you have that guy that can step right in, and yeah, it might be a little bit of a loss, but you're not like, oh, we lost Doc for the season, the season's over. And I was like, oh shit, we lost Doc for a couple months. But you know what? Beck can hold his own in that position. He's probably not going to get as many points, but he's not gonna hurt us either. That's where we have to get to, and we're far from that right now. So
And because of this lack of depth, what we saw today in that 7-2 loss to the Blues, it was a weak start to the game for the Canadians. But in the second and third, they outplayed St. Louis. They had almost 60% control of the game, puck possession wise, in the second and third periods. But Allan having a bit of a having a tough time, let in a couple of goals that he probably wouldn't have wanted to, and that
Penalties.
weak start. Yeah, and the penalties, and the shit power play and shit penalty kill on top of that, it really did not help the Canadians. So in this game, I mean, against Dallas, they didn't have the same penalty problems and they were almost able to pull out a win. Now the Blues are fighting for a playoff spot, so they're a little bit more they were a little bit
Hungrier.
more structured and just the desire was there to win. Whereas the Canadians, they know they're not making the playoffs and they are playing for jobs, but at the same time, the lack of depth hurt them.
It's same with last year, and I guess when you're in a rebuilding team, you don't really have the depth. But like I say, I think they're, I said earlier, I think they're only one or two pieces of that forward line away from starting to pull up once this defense gets put into structured. Then I think they're, I mean, a healthy team, this team healthy with the right draft pick and maybe the right moves in the offseason, you could see them looking at a playoffs wild card spot. I'm not saying they're going to get it, but they could be like, it's right there, right?
Well, had they been
Healthy,
healthy all
this
season,
team.
they're a borderline just outside the playoff picture type team.
Well, and it's basically what the way this year went. Like we were saying earlier, if they get 80 points, which was what we predicted before,
Yeah.
80 points last year was not that far out of the playoffs.
No.
80 points this year, you're still a bottom 10 team. So it's like, but like Montreal right now, they lost today, or as of yesterday, I don't know what it is today, but as of yesterday, they were 8 points from a playoff spot and 8 points from drafting fifth. So, like they're,
Well, let's just see. I'm going to bring it up right now.
last year, if you were 8 points from a playoff spot,
Yeah.
you were probably drafting 12th or 13th.
They are 10 points out of a playoff spot, and they are currently drafting
Seventh, that's what they were
seventh.
yesterday. Yeah, they
Yeah.
were, that's what they were after yesterday's game too.
And the issue here is clearly the goal differential for them. I think they're one of the worst in the NHL with goal differential. Let's just take a look.
I wouldn't doubt
They
it.
are fourth worst team of goal, just ahead of
Yeah.
Columbus.
Yeah.
Washington's not too far behind them either.
And you know what? Brian Wilde made a good point at the first of the season. He goes, oh, it's not the goals we're putting in that we got to worry about. It's the goals staying out of our net that's going to be the issue. And he's not wrong.
Yes.
And
That's
he
true.
wasn't wrong. Like, I mean, last year, I think I did the math. They were 5 goals away from actually being a 3-goal-per-game team. So if you had Caulfield all year, you would have reached that. I don't know what they are this year. I didn't really look at
They're
it,
about the same. They're a little bit better, I think. They're slightly better. But defensively, again, they're slightly better, but they're not good enough of an improvement
Right.
defensively. I think they're still, last year they were giving up close to 4 goals goals per game, and now it's like 3.8. Like it's better, but it's not really.
Yeah, I know. I would say it's about the same. I wouldn't even say it's better, really. It's
Yeah.
just,
But not
but
really.
funny, going back to injuries and say we're going to an injury train. Funny thing is, this year, Montreal has 5 players who've played every game so far this season. Whereas last year, they had one, and only one other player had more than 70 games, and that was Kovalchuk. So it's pretty, when you look at it that way, you're like, that's pretty wild considering, yeah, the Canadians still have all these injuries, but they still have 5 players who've played. Yeah, so Kovalchuk played 77 games. The next guy to him was Josh Anderson at 69. Josh,
Nice.
you dirty boy.
But
Yeah,
that
and
is a good step forward when you think about it,
that's a
having
good
five
step forward.
guys. Yeah, exactly. So it's while
Yeah.
the injury bug is biting again, it's not quite where it was the last couple of years.
It isn't, but it's still to significant players that
Yes. Yeah.
like I wouldn't care if, and don't take this the wrong way, but I mean if Harvey Pinard got injured for the season, I'd be like, we lost Harvey Pinard. Well, okay. I mean, I thought Harvey Pinard was really good at killing penalties when he was
He
playing,
was. Yeah.
and so he lost that. Or if I don't know, Joel
Pearson.
Armia got injured, or Pearson got injured, I wouldn't be all, or Anderson at this point, or Gallagher, I wouldn't be all, oh no. But we're losing Doc, and we're losing, like last year, Caulfield, Slafkovský, and Doc, and I mean, Dvorak. People will say, "Oh, who cares about Dvorak?" I think
That's a
Dvorak's a
big
solid.
loss.
I think it's a big loss. He's a solid third line guy. He kills penalties. He's great on the face off. That is a loss. So I don't care. He's not a
Especially,
guy.
especially when you're losing him, especially when you're thinking about all the added pressure on Suzuki. Like he could take away a lot of that defensive pressure.
And especially when you're trading Monahan. Like, I mean, right
Yeah.
now it's Dvorsky as your second line center, not Evans. Who would you rather have? Well, if you say Evans, then you don't know hockey. But and I'm not looking at Dvorak as this. I keep saying Dvorsky for some reason. I'm not looking at Dvorak as a scoring center that's gonna, he's not. He's a two-way third line center that plays a solid game in his own end and occasionally pops in a goal or gets a few points. But
He's a
I'm keen
solid
to
third line center.
solid third line center, and that's what he's been playing. And I don't see what the big complaint is really about him, but people don't. I think it's because we gave up a first, the only first Mark Bergevin traded was for Dvorak. So, well. Oh, by
I
the
think
way.
Hughes has made up for it, though.
Oh, well, yes, for sure. For sure. I mean, Dvorak was at a 59.9% face-off rate, so
I hear that's good.
that's pretty good. That's pretty good. It's the best on the team. Actually, the best on the team is Jesse Ylönen at 71.4, but he only had 7 face-offs. So,
Technically, still good.
and then Anderson's next at 62.5, and he's
And
had
who would be better at
16
69?
face-offs.
Yeah. Now, I know a lot of people like to poo-poo the face-off numbers. Oh, face-offs aren't that important. But when you're a team like the Canadians, who absolutely need that possession to compete, it's very important to start a shift with the puck as opposed to chasing the other team to get it.
Well, not just that, but you look at a team who has a porous PK or power play. If you win most of your face-off, it makes your PK and power play that much better because you have
Exactly.
possession of the puck more often than not. So, yeah, and looking at it now, every Montreal center has over a 50, has over a 50% face-off rate. Well, I mean, Newhook is, but every actual center. We're looking at Dvorak, Stevens, Monahan, Suzuki, Evans, and I'll even say Condotta. All are 15 above in the faceoff. So Montreal really improved their faceoff game this season as opposed to last season when
Well, I think it's been, what, 10, 12 years since the Canadians can
the
boast two centers with 50% or more?
last like even last season, all they had was Monahan at 55%, Dvorak 52, and Evans 52. And then Suzuki was 47. So yeah,
Yet another
Hoffman.
area that Suzuki's improved.
Hoffman, 57.1, and we got rid of the guy.
Jeez, imagine that.
I don't get it. I don't get
My God.
Yes, Suzuki, 53.7. So he actually went up by almost 6 points on the face-off. So
Yeah.
good for him.
Now, the Canadians are, I mean, now we're watching, it's a lottery race again. Ottawa's starting to win games. I mean, they got guys who can just slap that puck into open nets. Buffalo's a couple of games behind. They got a couple games in hand. They're only 2 points back. Arizona's even. They got a couple games in hand. So the Canadians could easily slide further down. And with a couple more trades, they probably will. So
I listen,
they are
man, from what
improving.
they're doing exactly what here at Habs Unfiltered wanted them to do. They wanted individual
Exactly.
players to improve while the team slightly improved, but still kept that good position too. And I said, and I'm going to be wrong again this year, I said they'd be healthy. I said they'd be drafting 10 to 15. I still believe that. I still believe healthy they would be. But unhealthy, they won't. And they're going to draft top five. Of course, everyone on here are probably bad takes. The Habs bad takes guys probably going to throw that on there. That's perfectly okay. I get it. But just so people know, like I did say if healthy. But of course, people are going to look at the, they're going to
I
look at it and
heard
say
it. You said it.
they're a bottom five team. They're a bottom five team. Well, yeah, but no. Not on paper. Anyway.
At the start of the year, looking at the lineup with a healthy lineup, no.
They were not a
And
bottom. And they weren't
I
the year
agreed.
before. But they weren't the year before. But here we are.
But now they're looking at a top five pick again. In this year's draft, there's a lot of really good young players. So it's seeing young guys improve slightly or exponentially, like Slafkovský has, and then seeing the team improve somewhat, but still drafting high, I think is the ideal position to be in at this moment.
And if the scouting goes the way McKenzie says it's going to go, which usually is pretty close, there's going to be three defensemen in the top five. So that means that one of Demidov, Lindstrom, or Katten, or Ginla, if you think he should be there, is going to be available to the Canadiens at five, six, or seven, wherever they decide. If they pick fifth, they're getting one of them. If they're six or sevens, they still have a chance to get one of them. So,
I'm kind of hoping it's Demidov just so that I can watch everybody's minds just explode. Oh my God, they picked a Russian. Yeah, they picked the Russian they wanted.
I'm hoping it's Demidov or Lindstrom. If it's not Demidov, I want to be Lindstrom. But to me, they're if they one of those guys on the board and they go off and pick, I don't know, some defenseman, I'm done. I have no idea what this team is doing anymore. Like, I mean, I wasn't fully on the Reinbacher pick right away because I wanted a Leonard. I wanted Ryan Leonard. But after I looked at it and I saw that he was actually wasn't a reach, it wasn't a, and I saw what they were, I see the plan. I was like, okay, I get it. I get why they picked Reinbacher. So.
Now, all right, so we're coming to the end of the show. Any final thoughts?
No, not really. Just remember this team is hurt, rebuilding, and get pucks in deep, go to the net, work hard, don't take your foot off the gas.
110%.
Yeah, put 110%. The boys are all playing for each other. We know what we have. Slap that puck into the net. Slap it right into the empty net every chance you get.
All right. So now, with the Super Bowl happening tonight, who do you have? Do you have the 49ers or do you have the Taylor Swifts?
I could care less about this Super. First time in a long time, I could care less about two teams in a football game. I'm a Steelers fan, as everyone knows. Our buddy Chris Puzzi's a huge 49ers fan, so I know who he's with. Personally, I don't like Patrick Mahomes, so I'm going to go with the San Francisco Giants. I'm going to hope Purdy outthrows him, but and it's not, and I don't care about the Taylor Swift thing. Like, if you want to blame anyone, blame the NFL and the station that keeps going to her. And if you really think about it, it's a perfect strategy, strategy, because now they're getting all the fans that didn't watch football before watching football just so they could see Taylor Swift.
Exactly.
So what
Maybe
we
they.
need now is Slepkowski to date Rihanna or someone like that so that she can go to all his hockey games and then make hockey popular.
Beyonce.
No, we just need Taylor Swift to dump Kelce, write a song about him, and then start date with Slavkovsky. You know what's
Oh.
going to happen.
Well, personally, I want to see Taylor Swift on the screen for more than 1 minute in the game because that hasn't happened yet. And I want to see the absolute chaos that'll hit Twitter because of it. Oh my God, they've ruined football while everyone's watching commercials versus the game.
I mean, I'll be honest, that's what I'll watch tonight now that we get them in Canada. I'll be watching the commercials. I don't care about the halftime show either, but yeah.
Was it the guy singing the thong song? Is that who it is?
No, it's Usher.
Oh,
I
whoever it
don't know what
is.
Usher. I don't know what Usher's saying. I know Usher, I just don't really know. I don't listen to him, I don't know what he's saying.
I'm sure he'll be fine.
Reba McEntire singing the anthem though with what's his name? Post Malone.
Canadian.
Is Post Malone Canadian?
I think so. Oh no, that's the weekend.
Yeah. You know, he did the Super Bowl a couple years back.
Yeah. Oh well, whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
Anyway, go commercials. Woo!
Already seen most
Yeah.
of them.
All right. So just a all right. So we'll end it here. I want to thank everyone for tuning in. Thank you for listening. We appreciate your interaction with us. Keep sending your emails. Keep sending us your comments. Check us out on YouTube. Like and subscribe. We're slowly growing there. We'd like to have a few more people. We're going to put this on YouTube as well. So thank you all for listening and watching. And remember, if you're talking about it, so are we.
Do, Did, Will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first five episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all three of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.
The Podcast Super Friends is a monthly meeting of five podcast producers.
Hi, I'm Catherine O'Brien from Branch Out Programs in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
I'm John Gay from Jagged Detroit Podcasts.
I'm Matt Kundle from the Sound Off Podcast Network.
I'm David Yes from Pod 617, the Boston Podcast Network.
And I'm Johnny Peterson from Straight Up Podcasts.
Together, they form the Podcast Super Friends, an alliance of podcast masterminds sharing best practices, insights, and discussions to help make you a better podcaster. Follow or subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or at soundoff.network.